Welcome, welcome to Freaked Out with your co-host, Liz and Landon.
What's up, everybody?
Today, guys, we are bringing you an early episode. We're going to be covering a topic that we really never anticipated covering, but you know what? We're just going to go for it. We're not going to limit ourselves anymore. I have no idea who we're going to channel or what we're going to channel, but we're going to try and see what in the hell we're going to come up with.
Absolutely. Now, before we get into this episode, I do want to give a huge, huge, huge birthday shout out to Liz. It is her birthday. So everybody in the comments, put a little happy birthday, put a little celebration.
Aw. Thank you so much. 41.
Exactly. The big 4-1. Now, we didn't really get to do anything for her birthday last year, but we do have something planned for her birthday this year. So hopefully she will really enjoy this surprise. And I hope you guys really enjoy this episode. Now, we don't normally cover serial killers at all. We've only done one, which was Eileen, but she was cool. So this is going to be interesting.
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, I'm going to give you guys a little confession. I really don't know much about Jack the Ripper. I just knew of his name and that he was a serial killer. Other than that, I didn't know anything. So we really had to like start from the ground up. But we did have such an outpour of people wanting us to cover this episode, like way more than 3 people, you know?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Now, in this episode, we may refer to Jack the Ripper as JTR. So if you hear us saying JTR, that is just an abbreviation, but it still means Jack the Ripper.
And who knows, depending on what we find out from JTR, we may even spend more time on this topic in the future. Maybe even a few TikToks about it. So strap on your glasses. Make sure to comb your purple hair. Make sure you have the kitties eating their hot dogs. Get your broom. Start washing those dishes because this, my friend, is going to be a bumpy ride.
Absolutely. Now this episode will be a little bit more exciting than your Amazon packages coming to your door.
I totally would agree with that. I'm sure that I've had over 1 million packages coming to my door, including like hundreds of tarot cards. It's not quite as exciting as this episode, though. And you guys are all going to be our sleuth detectives. And if you have any input, we would love to hear it.
Absolutely. Now, what we do know is that this is a very, very lengthy case. In order for us to give you everything, including all the details of this case and also all the visions that Liz is picking up on, we are going to have to give you guys a bit of both, just so you know that this is most definitely a part one. We are definitely going to probably do another part, if not multiple parts.
Oh, yeah. We've got like 6 murders to cover in this, not including what we also don't know. So, and we're only covering one today.
Exactly. So let's get into it.
Okay. Now, finding information about this particular case has been exceptionally difficult, but that's okay. We managed to find out some things, and I'm not sure if it's the beginning, but we're just going to go with it.
Now, this is one of the most high-profile unsolved cases to this date. It goes way back to the Victorian England era.
And for those of you that do not know what that means, it is a period of British history that lasted from 1837 to 1901 during the reign of Queen Victoria. It was a time of great wealth and power for Britain as it expanded its empire across the globe. It is also a period of rapid advancements in science, industry, and the arts.
Furthermore, this is part of the Whitechapel District, including London and an area in Seattle. The Whitechapel is a diverse and vibrant district in East London. It is known for its alternative music, the art scene, street art, and trendy cafes. There's some hit bars there, vintage shops, and everything nowadays.
Oh, wow. And back in the 19th century, the area was home to a large working class population. It was also known for its extreme poverty, unsanitary living conditions, and a diverse local culture, also famously known for Jack the Ripper murders, as it became easily one of the most notorious slums in the Victorian London area.
Now, back in 1888, an unknown killer used to strike fear within the community and the people of London between August 31st and November 9th. His victims were all prostitutes, and he did kill every single one of them.
Yes, and he ended up slitting their throats, and to this day, they have only been able to verify 5 women that he had killed. I believe that the number is much, much greater, but he did not get the satisfaction of getting his name attached to the other murders as well.
Before they settle on the name Jack the Ripper, they came up with many different names for him, but one being Leather Apron. They also came up with Whitechapel Jack and Whitechapel Murderer.
I think, like, you know, the name of Leather Apron's kind of creepy, you know?
Lame.
I think the nickname they chose is probably the best. There are people that dedicate their lives to knowing the ins and outs of the Ripper. They even call themselves Ripperologists.
That's kind of cool, Ripperologists. We're going to be Ripperologists today. I think Jack the Ripper is much better, in my opinion, than any of these other names they came up with. But I also would consider Jack the Ripper someone who brought serial killers and murderers to a light in a very big way.
Oh, yeah. Now we're hopping into our time machine, getting all of our followers, including Franny the Nanny, to hop into the machine with us today.
Absolutely. Now let's keep manifesting this time machine. And I would really like to get my hands on one for
right?
my own doing. Now, the Victorians looked at things very much in an old-fashioned way. They had Victorian morals and values that were governed by religious teachings, and some Victorians included cleanliness, work, respectability, self-help, self-interest, self-control, self-discipline, and self-respect.
And of course, family values and charity and sexual repression. Personal responsibility and a strong work ethic. You had to basically be pretty fucking perfect.
Absolutely. Now, like everything else in the world, these values conflicted with social tendencies of the time, which included prostitution, child labor, and exploiting people of the lower class. Kind of still like what we do today.
Yeah, we definitely do. And we just don't put labels on it anymore. No. We just pretend it's not around.
Yep.
But I do feel like we definitely exploit people who are within, you know, the line of work of prostitution. And also the poor people continue to keep getting poorer and the rich continue to get richer. Although right now there are claims that people are being helped. I don't necessarily feel like people are being helped enough at the moment.
Absolutely not. Probably never going to happen, unfortunately. Now, the Victorian morality also dictated that women were not sexual beings compared to men, that women are expected to remain pure until marriage, and a pregnant, unmarried woman would be viewed as a social outcast.
How dare a woman get pregnant after a man had sex with her? A woman cannot get pregnant on her own, but yet somehow it only becomes the woman's problem. And people still have this type of mindset, even to this day.
Absolutely. It's fucking sickening. Fucking sickening. Like, women cannot just, boop, get pregnant. Like, a man has to do it. Like, that's sick. And a woman can only have one baby at a time, or, you know, if they have multiples. But a man could have 10,000 women pregnant in one time frame, which is crazy to me. But, you know, we're pushing abortion rights away from women, or even, you know, stuff that they shouldn't do.
Right. And that's why we get like women killing their own babies, because they're basically being forced to have children that they don't really want.
Right. And they're not allowed to have birth control that actually is helpful to them. And, you know, there's a lot of side effects to that. Unlike for men, not really many side effects to their birth control. Now, there is also a lot of underground prostitution going on in brothels at this time, and that was also a very high demand at this time.
Mm-hmm. Now that we're in 1888 and walking through the streets of London, we find the first incident that took place. Now, people consider it the best of times and the worst of times. Heading down a cobblestone alleyway that is extremely narrow, by the way, It was an overcast day. There was a lot of smog, which, you know, may cause you to cough. And the street was filled with the smell of urine, feces, and rotted food.
Such a delicious combination.
Right?
But that definitely sounds disturbing. Now, there was a lot of Irish and Jewish immigrants that flooded the streets. The poverty over there was pretty bad, and a lot of people had never seen such bad poverty in that particular location ever before.
And due to the poverty being so terrible, it drove many, many women to prostitute. Approximately 1,200 prostitutes in that very low-class resident of Whitechapel, and there were also 62 brothels.
Man, that's a lot of prostitutes in one small area. You couldn't even find that many today in an area. They spread out.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, obviously, of course, the price was extremely low back then. These men could obtain a prostitute for a very, very low cost.
We'll get to the cost value here in just a little while.
There's also a book that was published called My Secret Life, which was published in 1888, and it was written by an anonymous writer.
Which I'm going to claim here right now, 100% without a doubt, it was Jack the Ripper. He didn't want to go unnoticed. He wanted people to see him. I can feel that from him. I can sense that he enjoyed people being afraid of him, or at least somewhat. Somehow, he thought that by going forward and doing all of these things, that would make the world a better place, and he would be looked at as some sort of superhero, supervillain, something very unusual. He just wanted to be seen.
Now, in this book, this man would often write about what was going on the streets, basically saying that he could walk down the streets and it didn't matter what time of year it was. It could be cold as ice or it could be hot as hell. Their windows were always open and you could always call upon them with no issues. They would usually have a room set aside to just have sex.
Yeah, everyone knew that you could get a prostitute. They would often group women together. And they would be in their nightgowns and, you know, two or three of them would be ready to go. Sometimes the women would often be just hanging out of the windows, showing their breasts to entice passerbyers.
Now, he goes on to write that by giving them 1 shilling, you could basically see just about anything right down to their knees.
And again, that was super risque, right? So someone would pull down their garter. Sometimes they would just go a little far, even piddling for people.
Now, that is urination, if you don't know what that means. And that is when the urination era began. Now, R. Kelly probably would really enjoy this era.
Oh, yeah, he would. The Ripper would often engage with these women, pay their shillings, and also expect them to be touched. Now, he often indicated that ever since he got involved with this, he wanted it more and more.
Now, according to the book, he was often met with very minimal refusals and would often be able to get just about whatever he wanted whenever he wanted. He was also not very rich because his mother would take his money from him, so he took a very minimal amount of money that he had and he would do what he can control, which was go to the prostitutes.
Yeah, it sounds like he had a fascination pretty early on in the book from what I gather as well. But also want to point out, it feels like he had some major mommy issues, like major.
Maybe his mom was a prostitute.
Oh, good point. Touche. I would also say an obsession was what took place when he, you know, came to these prostitutes, because it just seems like he heavily focuses on them. The reason that men usually go to prostitutes is because they can't obtain their own sexual encounters with women, or they're married and bored.
Mm-hmm. Or perhaps they were not well endowed. Perhaps medical reasons prevented them from having any sort of sexual relationship.
That was totally connected to him, too. Sorry. Either way, he didn't spend a lot of time having sex with them, and he did notice that it didn't matter how much money he'd spend, whether it was the 1 or 2 shillings or the 500 pounds, the sex was usually about the same.
There's not much to it, you know? Now, there was a part in this book where he had met with a woman that had very large breasts, and she may have been on the heavier set side. he enjoyed this particular sexual experience with her. And since he didn't often have sex with these types of women, having sex with somebody like this was a big deal for him specifically. Now, you know the old saying, more cushion for the pushin. That's probably why you had a great experience.
That and also a lot of women who, in my opinion, who are like larger, they really put in that extra effort.
Absolutely.
To go the extra mile, you know. Anyway, the other thing I want to point out when it comes to Jack the Ripper's book, he would often use profanities like cunt and fuck. And although those words are, you know, not too shabby, I mean, cunt is pretty bad out here. I don't like that word. They were not used often, let alone in a book, you know?
Yeah, and that didn't really become popular until the 1970s to the 1990s. Same goes for that word, you know, cunt, which is still considered very offensive and crude. But, you know, back then, if you were called a cunt, that was actually a good thing. It was meant like you were a friend, unlike now today. That does not mean that.
Oh, interesting. I didn't even know that.
Those were the two, you know, profanities that were very common in the general population, you know, 130 years ago.
Well, in this day and age, one shilling is approximately $20. And obviously they had high-end prostitutes, which was way more, and approximately sitting at $1,900. Isn't that crazy?
Back then, that was a lot of money.
Right? If you're sleeping with a low-end prostitute, it could be extremely dangerous. And the lower it goes, that was probably the scariest part of it.
Right. Those are the people that probably had some sort of, you know, diseases or something like that.
Yeah, we're going to get into that right now.
Now, these women did not have access to running water all the time. They were pretty dirty. They would often have, you know, venereal diseases like syphilis and gonorrhea. And this is, you know, back in the day when antibiotics were just not discovered yet for these types of things. So you pretty much would die from having sex with one of these prostitutes pretty easily.
And condoms were really not a thing back then. They did exist, but no one used them. And, you know, it is crazy that wasn't even the scariest part of what would happen here.
I mean, yeah, back then you it was pretty much like a lamb intestine condom. So people were like, ew, no, I don't want that. Now, often prostitutes would steal money from their sleeping clients and then would often get into some sort of physical altercation with their clients. And some of these prostitutes had pimps, which would usually help these women steal these men's wallets and their money and usually hit them over the head with some sort of cane or something.
Hey, what a big risk. It would not be worth it to me. I would definitely stay home and find, you know, a very misunfortunate looking person over this situation. And the crazy thing is that this is not the most dangerous aspect of this either.
Absolutely not. Now, the danger was often on the streets or in the alleyways. Many men and women were often murdered by thieves during the night.
Oh, yeah. And they were able to get away with it easily because of the smog and it being dark. Nobody's going to come and try to chase them away. I know I wouldn't want to be out there chasing people in the dark in this particular area.
Now let's talk about his very first victim, which was Mary Ann Nichols, a.k.a. Pauline. Now, she was a drunk. She was also thirsty for more booze all the time. It was 1:20 in the morning, and she was at Deputy and Wilmont Lodging House. Sadly, she then got kicked out.
According to sources, she had drank away any money that she could have spent on a bed for the night. And although her name was Marianne, she liked to go by Polly. She decided she was going to find a man and lay with him so she could obtain the rest of the money she needed to spend the night at this lodging house.
Now, poor drunken Polly, she had even run into a friend of hers, Ellen Holland, and they offered for her to come to the lodging house with her, but Polly refused.
Well, from what I pick up on the situation, she was hoping that she would get enough money for herself to get a place, but also a little bit more money to get more alcohol. You know what I mean?
Now, it was no longer the summer weather, and it was raining, and flashes of thunderstorms, basically a very miserable night.
Ellen came across Polly on the corner of Osborne Street and Whitechapel Road at about 2:30 a.m., and Polly was drunk and leaning up against a wall and bragging about her achievements and how she had made so much money three times over, but had already drank it all away.
Now, sadly, it was the last time that anyone had ever seen her alive. And at 3:40 in the morning, on the morning of August 31st, a man named Charles Cross had made his way down the narrow avenue on Bucks Road on his way to work in the early morning darkness. There was a large object laying in the doorway of a host table. Closer to investigate, thinking it was a tarp or something abandoned in the streets a few feet closer, he realized the figure on the ground was a human. He hesitated, unsure of how he should proceed.
According to Charles, he and another man by the name of Robert Paul, who had also come across this object, and, well, Carter was basically in distress, and this guy kind of came over and that there was a woman on the streets, and obviously these two men approached the stretched out figure on the ground.
Her skirt was pulled up to her waist. Tentatively, they felt her hands and her face, and they were cold. Cross thought that he had seen some movement in her chest, thinking that she was possibly alive.
Yeah, she definitely wasn't. I think that these men also kind of knew that she was dead.
They just didn't want to be part of that.
You got it. I think they realized rather quickly and didn't want to get their suits messed up for work. So, you know, the responsible thing to do was just to leave it alone and head off to any police officer they could. I feel like these men didn't want to deal with it. So perhaps maybe even one of them is the OG, Jack the Ripper.
Definitely could be, for sure. Now, the men pulled her skirt down to her knees to at least cover her up and argued whether they should prop her up in the doorway. So they were running late, so they decided to just render for further assistance on the scene.
Yeah, justifying their behavior by agreeing to tell the first constable they run into. On their way to work, of course. And they just left this woman's body alone, laying across the gateway.
I mean, I could never just leave an animal laying somewhere to die, let alone a human being. But that is just proof of how, you know, cruel humanity is and can be.
No, selfish. Selfishness. Total selfishness. Sorry, sir. I'm late to work because I found a dead body in the alleyway. I hope you're not angry about it.
I'm definitely pretty sure that that was the best excuse that you could come up with, being late to work back then at that time, even now to this day. Like, holy Lord.
Right. Now, once they crossed paths with Constable Mason 55H, they decided to tell the constable their story and what took place and scurried off to work.
Now, they said that she looks to be either dead or drunk or possessed, Charles said to the constable.
It was clear to the constable that she was very much dead, and I believe that it was clear to the men, in their incompetent, utter denial, and just really, honestly, just didn't want to face facts. You know, even propping her up. Why the hell would you want to prop up a dead body?
Because they probably wanted to make it look like she was just, like, you know, bent over, like, in a drunken slough. Like, why also would you touch, you know, anything on the body? Because now your prints and everything are going to be all over it at this point.
Right.
And now you're not going to get the full scene of what happened.
Let's talk a little bit about Polly and her past. I think it's important. Polly was a daughter to a locksmith by the name of Edward Walker. He and his wife, Papa Caroline, had a child on August 26th, 1845. I was not able to find out a whole heck of a lot when it came to her childhood, but it seems like she grew up pretty okay. But I am assuming she had a lot of trauma. From what I gather from the spirit, she shows me she definitely did. And obviously back in the day, they didn't take sexual assault or sexual abuse or molestation as a factor as to why people acted the way they did. So she shows me she was raped on a consistent basis from many people in her family, including her father.
Which obviously led to her very promiscuous behavior that also ultimately led for her to become a prostitute. I mean, why wouldn't she? She went on to marry a William Nichols. He was a printer in 1864, and they were together for 15 years. They had 5 children: Edward John Nichols, Percy, George, Alice, Esther, and Eliza, Sarah, and Henry Alfred.
Now, from what I can see from Polly, which, by the way, she decided not to come back. She didn't want to start over again, which I understand why. But it is, you know, it was a grueling death that she had. And from what I've been told, she showed me that she loved being a mom. She loved having her husband. It looked like they did have a pretty decent relationship for about 10 years. And unfortunately, he ended up stepping out in their relationship and then had an affair with his mistress.
You know, there's always a mistress always involved in the marriage when it's coming to falling apart. Now, however, William also stated that Polly had been confined with ill health and her husband had actually taken up with the nurse.
Scandalous. She shows me that it was one of the most traumatizing situations that took place in her life because he had given her the impression he was going to stay with her forever. Regardless of what happened in the sickness and the health part, and sadly, he started thinking with
his penis.
Pretty much. She shows me that, you know, it obviously traumatized her and she went back to drinking because she was drinking in the past and she had gotten to a good place and not drank for a while. She shows me she used to drink quite heavily in her younger years, and I'm not entirely sure, but she shows me it was pretty intense. And as soon as she found out that her best friend, the man that she had 5 kids with that didn't abuse her, decided he wanted to be with the nurse instead, she checked out of life.
I mean, that's enough for anybody. Now, William did not deny to the family about the nurse, only the idea that this affair had been the reason for the marriage's ultimate demise, and that it was really her fault. He produced the birth certificate testifying that his son, with his mistress, was born only after Polly had left him.
Sorry I slept with your nurse, but I still haven't left you. I'm still with you. I just did that for fun. It's not a reason for me to leave you, though. Imagine, and then him going and having a kid with this woman. I'm pretty sure, you know, he produced 15 more kids after this point.
I mean, yeah, why not, Bagman? Now, clearly, Polly had many demons within her. Obviously, she became more addicted to the alcohol, and William carried on with all 5 children while she bounced in and out of the situation.
I guess William sort of kind of felt bad about this in his heart and was still sending her support payments. I mean, him supporting 5 kids, his new wife, his new child, like, even though they were no longer together, until he found out about her prostituting, and then that was it. He basically let the government know, hey, I'm paying for her, but she's sleeping with other men. She's in the company of other men, so she does not need me anymore.
By the time Polly turned up dead, William had not seen his wife for 3 years. How do you, like, not see somebody for 3 years?
Right. Obviously, the kids didn't see her either, you know. After the demise of her relationship with her husband, she went to stay with her father. She did continue to drink and caused quite a bit of tension between her and dad. Polly then was soon out on the streets again, breaking all contact with her father. And her father claimed that he had left her on her own accord after a particularly bad argument and that he knew she would come to a bad end.
I also do want to mention that her brother had a very tragic end as well. He died when a paraffin lamp exploded and then burned him alive.
Holy shit. I'm honestly thinking like this family has zero luck. Obviously, the family was depressed over this tragic death. And the last time they had physically seen Polly was at the funeral. And the family observed that she was dressed respectfully, possibly due to her living with a local blacksmith, Thomas, at the time.
Notably, she was out on the streets yet again in October of 1887. She decided to get one last final attempt at getting her life back on track, and she took a job as a domestic servant in a household of Samuel and Sarah Cowdery. She was trying to quit drinking, gain some control of her life. She broke the 4 years of silence with her father to make amends by writing the following letter to him. I write to you to say that you will be glad to know that I am settled in my new place. I am doing well. My people went out yesterday and have not returned, so I am left in charge. I am in a grand place inside with trees and the gardens in the back and in the front. All have been newly done up. They're very nice people, and I have not too much to do, so goodbye from the present, from yours truly, Polly.
He did write back to her, but he didn't know if she received the letter. I don't think she did. He had never heard from his daughter ever again. He had heard 2 months later she had left her employment, taking £3, 10 shillings worth of stolen clothes with her.
When she was found dead, it was only 5 days after her 43rd birthday. Now, going back to the day that her body was found, after the two men found the body and told the police constable, John Neal was walking when he came across a corpse. Lying on the ground in the back road, shining his lantern on her face, and saw that her eyes were wide open. And now John Thane, 96J, approached to offer his help.
Now, John took his lantern and lit it up, and he had seen the gash on her throat, almost deep enough to completely decapitate her. Upon observing the wounds, Neal sent Thane to fetch Dr. Reese Ralph Levine to pronounce her dead on sight. And from the warmth in her extremities, according to Dr. Reese Ralph Levine, she'd only been dead for less than half an hour.
Holy Lord. Now, with his calculation, she had only been dead for that half hour, which was confusing since all of this would have transpired within that 30-minute window that they were walking.
Right. Which is why I'm like, the hell? Jack the Ripper didn't have much time. Neal himself had been within an earshot of the site for only a few minutes before the body was discovered and had heard nothing by then. Now, a crowd of early risers had begun coming on site where Dr. Levine decided to call for the body to be moved from the scene. And then they started to question everyone if they had seen or heard anything unusual.
Now, John Spaulding arrived, consulted with Thane after the body had been taken away by the ambulance.
Dr. Levine had gone home to bed. All right. What were you doing all night? The body had been taken to the workhouse mortuary in Old Mont Street again soon after, while attempting to move the body from the ambulance into the morgue. John Spaulding observed that the unusually brutal mutilation lay beneath her clothing. Her abdominal had been slashed, a jagged cut exposing her from the pubic to the breastbone, along with an additional cut to the abdomen. The wound had been inflicted with such violence, downward steps into the victim's body.
There's only notes available because there is no autopsy available anymore in relation to what he had felt and seen in this situation. Upon an initial examination of the body, summarizes finding that this way the throat has been cut from left to right, two distinctive cuts being on the left side of the windpipe, gullet and spinal cord being cut through a bruise apparently of a thumb being on the right lower jaw. Also, one on the left cheek, the abdomen had been cut open from center of the bottom of the ribs along the right side. Under pillow was left of the stomach. There was a wound that was jagged. The coating of the stomach was also cut in several places and two small stabs on her private parts, all apparently done with a strong bladed knife, supposed to have been done by someone who was left-handed, with death being almost instantaneously.
Sounds like Jack liked to mutilate people. And from the looks of it, from what it sounds like, this is definitely not his first victim. It seems to be exceptionally experienced, in my opinion.
He also didn't have a lot of time to do this. I believe that it was done at a separate location and maybe he just dropped her there because you would hear some sort of screaming going on if you were only a few feet away.
Oh, I agree with you wholeheartedly. I truly believe that this was obviously done in a different location where they had privacy. He was able to take his time with what he had planned to do. She shows me that it was absolutely done in one of the brothel rooms. So perhaps the man paid for the room and had intentionally planned to pay her. And at least that's what she thought. And she shows me that this was someone she had laid with in the past as well.
Was he ever violent towards her in the past?
From what she shows me, he had an unusual request, which consists of somebody, you know, if you were murdered, how would you react? How would you run? Would you stay? Would you fight? She thought it was very unusual. She also received a good amount of money from him the last time. So she just ignored these questions and just waited for the money so that she can continue to drink. She also shows me that she was ecstatic because she was going to have a room for the night, so she didn't have to worry about going to the inn. She just could easily sleep in this particular room because he ordered it for the entire night.
Now, they also did not hear any screaming on the roads, which would make sense as it was done somewhere else. And because she was lying on her back, she was definitely carefully placed there.
I know that there were no trails of blood from one place to the next when it comes to where she was killed, but I'm also thinking that the coroner was wrong when it comes to the time frame. I feel like a lot of blood that she had was in some sort of body bag. I feel like he had taken her from one place to the next without any issue while the blood was draining in this bag. And from what I can see, he was someone who did not like a mess. He was a seasoned vet when it comes to these types of murders already. So from what I gather, they didn't necessarily get the details right here. I feel like this man had access to things to take body parts away. I feel like he was fascinated with it. I also feel like he took his time. Although she didn't necessarily die, they gave approximately a half an hour window. I'm thinking it was more of like an hour when she was dead and she was placed in this particular place and position. Specifically because he wanted her there.
Yeah, I was going to say maybe she was wrapped up in like some sort of sheet or something, because back then they had like wool sheets and stuff like that. That would collect blood like crazy. Now, they also claim that they didn't hear any sort of carriage taking her to the spot, so he obviously had to like carry her.
Oh yeah, she shows me that there were a lot of people on this particular street that were too busy doing their own thing to even care if, you know, they heard screaming or whatever. It was very common, right? They would carry on with their evening regardless of what they heard. Most of the people were drunk anyway, so of course they didn't hear any sort of carriage coming their way.
And yes, it was confirmed that this person who had killed her had experience with the human anatomy. So, you know, you're right when it comes to that and him being fascinated. He was definitely in some sort of position where he knew exactly what he was doing.
Yeah, I'm thinking he really enjoyed pulling apart corpses, playing with his food. I'm going to call it that for the time being. He also wanted to see what it would be like to do something like this to someone who was still alive. I would say she probably was his fifth kill. Other than that, he didn't necessarily put on, you know, display, nor did he get people's attention at this point. So I feel like he was pleased with himself and his work when it came to his first four murders. So it became kind of an addiction and he had like became a master at it. So he needed people to see how amazing he was at his work.
Now, a lot of people speculate that Charles Cross may have spooked Jack the Ripper and he may have not been able to finish what he was planning to do.
I'm not entirely convinced either that Charles Cross doesn't have something to do with it, but we'll get to that on the next episode. It's too soon to tell. Even talking to Polly, she's almost petrified to express who this person is, which is really interesting. She's still traumatized to this day, 130-something years later.
Crazy. Now, maybe when you get to spend a little bit more time with Polly, you'll be able to get some more information out of her.
Oh, without a doubt. And she was grateful, though. She didn't actually feel like she was loved either, which is a whole heck of a lot of reasons why she drank. Her estranged husband and her eldest son and her father all took care of her funeral together. It made her happy. She truly felt loved in that moment, and she questioned that quite often.
Now, sadly, they were never able to figure out who actually killed her, and it was only 9 days after her body was found, another one of Jack's victims were brutally murdered.
Yes, we will heavily connect and talk about this on part two, which I cannot wait to get into because this is so crazy and so many little details. We're not going to want to miss any of this.
Absolutely. Now, I don't want this episode to end because we're enjoying doing this so much, but we still have yet to figure out who Jack the Ripper is. But I promise you guys, we are going to get to the bottom of it.
Absolutely. So let's keep joining us on this particular podcast. I'm not exactly sure when the next episode comes out. I'm thinking it's going to definitely be in May, though, because I want to keep on going.
Now, next week, we will be covering the highly anticipated Idaho 4 that everybody has been looking forward to doing. We've gotten so many requests for this, so we're finally going to be able to bring this to you guys.
Which will be exciting to see what happens.
Exactly. Now, until next time, guys, stay freaked out.